This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Jadea. It's time for our weekly Africa update. Millions of people in Darfur, Sudan are still struggling against violence and for food, land, and drinking water. The conflict there has killed 200,000 people and displaced more than 2 million. The Bush administration has long called Darfur a situation that is a genocide. The U.S. has enforced strict sanctions against Sudan's government, but nothing more. Over the weekend, protesters gathered around the world. They want UN members to push for a stronger peacekeeping force in Darfur now. Sudan's central government has pushed back against having any non-African troops in their country. And NPR's Gwen Tompkins just returned from Darfur and described what she saw.
Well, I was in El Fasher, which is a regional capital in northern Darfur, and we visited two camps for the internally displaced. Now, one of them is called Abu Shouk, and that's on the outskirts of El Fasher, and it has about 54,000 residents. And then the other one is called Kassab, and we reached that camp by helicopter, and it has about 24,000 residents. And, you know, Farai, these camps are filled to capacity, but you have to remember that there are more than 2 million people who are similarly encamped around this enormous region. Now, Darfur, at least northern Darfur, is hot and desolate and impoverished, and the encroachment of the desert on the farmland is in full effect. All you see is sand for miles and miles, and there are some oases where there are trees and grass and such, but these are few and far between, and there are some areas where the distance between two trees would equal a football field. Now, add to this area a conflict that is at heart about who gets to claim the water and the other natural resources, and you can see how simple and how complicated the situation in Darfur really is.
So how much of a peacekeeping presence is there, and where do negotiations stand to get more peacekeepers there?
Well, there are about 5,000 African Union peacekeepers in Darfur right now, but they are besieged. One peacekeeper recently told Reuters that government-supported Arab militias known as the Janjaweed are still attacking the farmers and camp dwellers of Darfur with impunity. But there are also reports that the Janjaweed are split and perhaps competing among themselves for resources, just as the black rebel groups fighting the Janjaweed have split and are preying on the civilians for the same meager resources. Now, the African Union peacekeepers have been in the middle of all this, and quite a few of them have been killed in recent months, which is a very demoralizing phenomenon. And their mandate is going to end on June 30th, which is not far from now.
So the international community is meeting with the Sudanese government in Tripoli, I guess a safe distance. Has there been any progress towards making the situation safer for the African Union troops or bringing in other peacekeepers?
Well, you're exactly right. There has been a meeting in Tripoli over the weekend, and the U.S. Special Envoy, Andrew Natsios, has said that they're making progress. He's sort of intimating that it may be possible to get all of the political actors, the Sudanese government and the rebel forces, together to talk their way into a political resolution to the crisis. But it's difficult to be optimistic about a substantially greater peacekeeping force at this stage because Khartoum has always been extremely resistant to a mixed international force. In fact, Khartoum has likened any effort that includes the presence of Americans or Europeans as an unwanted colonial presence.
Now, how much is Darfur on the minds of people in Khartoum, two very different areas of the same country?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, these are two very different areas, and I feel lucky to have seen a little bit of both of them. Now, many of the people in Khartoum are aware of the situation in Darfur, but not in very much detail. You know, Khartoum is a long way away from Darfur. It's a three-hour plane ride, and it's a 5 to 6 day drive to El Fasher. And the press is not at liberty to go there at will, and foreigners are heavily restricted. You have to get a special permit to travel to the region, so there's not much news. You know, a UN spokesperson told me recently that she is often contacted by local media in Khartoum who want her to verify the names of places in Darfur because they're not familiar with the region. So there's a disconnect. Also, Khartoum is surrounded by discord. It's got problems in the north, it's got problems in the east, in Darfur, and in the south. And they're supposed to, you know, there's a peace agreement in effect down south. But every region wants its share of the country's abundant resources, which include oil revenue. But they also want jobs and what many people would call basic civil rights that they are currently being denied. So it's a difficult situation all the way around. And it's important to remember that the Sudanese Sudanese president, Omar al-Bashir, he's responding to all of these domestic pressures when he acts, or in many cases, when he doesn't act with reference to Darfur.
Now, there are some sanctions that are in place against Sudan from the international community. Are people there feeling the pinch?
Well, yes and no, Farai. I mean, Khartoum has a vision for itself to become the Dubai of the African continent, you know, an extremely wealthy and prosperous-looking city that draws Arabs from all over the region to shop and do business. Now, even in the airport, there's a mock-up of what the town is supposed to look like in the coming years, and it's something akin to a combination of Dallas and San Francisco, sort of gleaming modern buildings and an imposing skyline. But the city is far from that now, and to some extent, it's because of current sanctions that have impeded development. But on a day-to-day basis, Khartoum seems to be doing just fine, Farai. They're selling a lot of oil to the Chinese and other nations, and they've been making friends with other non-Western nations, you know, Malaysia, the Arab bloc, Russia. They don't have American cars, but they've got Japanese cars and they've got Korean cars, and they're building at least 6 new bridges across the Nile River in Khartoum alone. You know, it's the strangest thing, because you go to Khartoum and you can still watch Oprah or Dr. Phil or almost any other American television show. You know, so in many ways, you know, you really can't see easily, you know, I mean, how these current sanctions have really hurt the average person in Khartoum, although the U.S. and Great Britain have threatened more.
Take us from Khartoum and sitting around being able to watch American television shows back to Darfur. Was there any experience that you had with any of the Darfuris? Did any of them try to petition you and say, I've got to tell you my story, you've got to help me? Give me a sense of how they treated you.
People in Darfur, as well as people in Khartoum, I have to say, seem to be very enthusiastic that foreigners had come to see them. In Darfur, people seemed to be extremely excited that Americans were there. I think that one of the impressions that I would take away from that experience is the effect of isolation on such a large group of people for such a long time. This war has gone on for 4 years now, this civil conflict. And, you know, 200,000 people dead, 2 million people displaced. And, you know, they really have been left to themselves for so long. You know, there are lots of international aid workers who were there who have really done a stunning job in terms of getting to the people who need the help the most and getting them food and water and some semblance of shelter. But the people of Darfur are lonely. That's, I think, the deepest impression that I had in that experience. They are in need of intercourse with the world. And so far, so many people have spoken for them, but they don't really have much of an opportunity to speak for themselves.
Gwen, very enlightening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Farai.
That was NPR Africa correspondent Gwen Tompkins speaking with us from Nairobi, Kenya.